Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are focusing all our energy on Kent Wagner's recent sermon at Harmony Christian Church, Thanksgiving, Anxiety, and the Psalms.
Yeah, and this is really designed for all of you getting ready for your Connect group discussions this week. Our mission is to really pull apart the core ideas so you can hit the ground running.
Absolutely. We want to distill the main points and, you know, those really practical takeaways. Wagner's message hits on something so many of us are feeling. This sense of modern anxiety.
He really does. From inflation to just the general exhaustion after the last few years, he maps out this strategy for shifting our perspective away from worry.
And he starts in probably the best place possible with a story, a Thanksgiving story.
Right, the great debate, oven turkey, smoked turkey.
Or the infamous fried turkey, which, you know, is always a bit of a risk.
And that's his entry point. He talks about being the designated turkey fryer safety guy on Jenny's family farm out in Kansas.
Which sounds like a pretty straightforward job until the live turkey shows up.
Oh, man. The live turkey. He called it turkey lurkey.
Even though Jenny's family apparently just called him Tom. And this bird, Tom, starts literally stalking him around the fryer.
It's such a funny image. He described it scraping its wing on the ground, just following him with this, like, intense focus. As if Kent was personally responsible for what was happening in that vat of boiling oil.
Exactly. It's hilarious, but then he just pivots so perfectly.
He does. He uses that feeling of being watched, of being stalked. And he says that's what our society feels like right now.
Not stalked by a turkey, though.
No, but by anxiety, by fear, by this constant nagging worry.
And he got really specific, which I appreciated. It wasn't just, you know, we're all stressed. He mentioned the financial strain from inflation, which is hitting everyone hard.
Mm-hmm. And that post-2020 pressure cooker feeling, that low-grade stress that just never seems to go away.
He even brought up that specific holiday dread of, you know, political arguments at the dinner table.
Yeah.
His advice was pretty simple on that one.
Don't talk about politics.
Right. Easier said than done, but, you know, it's the dread itself that's the problem.
But the stat that really, really stopped me was about teenagers. The fact that anxiety is now the number one mental health struggle for them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's not just a feeling. It's a generational crisis. And that sets up the first big tool he gives us to fight back.
The finger test. Okay, let's unpack this because it's so simple, but really profound.
The core idea is that when you're anxious, the problem gets so close to you that it's literally all you can see. It just consumes your entire vision.
So the test he used with his kids, you put a finger right up against your eye, close the other one.
Now, what do you see?
Just your finger. Nothing else.
Yeah.
The whole world is blocked out by this one thing that's right in your face.
Exactly. And that's the debt or the diagnosis or that conflict you're dreading at the family gathering. It becomes 100% of your reality.
So then the second part is just push the finger out.
Yeah.
Push it away from your face.
And suddenly you can see the whole room again. The problem, your finger, it hasn't disappeared, but it's now in context. It's tiny compared to everything else.
Okay, but that's the hard part, right? It's easy to move a physical finger.
Yeah.
How do you mentally push out the anxiety when, you know, the debt is real, or you're facing that first holiday without your mom or dad?
That is the critical question. And he says this is the spiritual discipline. Pushing the finger back is what the Bible means when it commands us to set our minds on things above.
Colossians 3:2. Set your mind on things above, not on earthly things.
Right. And Paul had to write that because he knew our default, our human instinct, is to stare at the earthly thing, the bill, the broken relationship.
So the command is an action. It's a push.
It's an active choice. And when you make that choice, the problem doesn't vanish, but maybe, just maybe, it goes from taking up 100% of your vision to maybe just 5%.
He also brought up 1 Peter 1:13, which adds another layer here. It says to be alert and fully sober about reality.
Mm-hmm. This is so important. It's not about denial. You don't pretend the problem isn't there. Being sober-minded means you see the finger clearly.
Open.
But then it says to set your hope on the grace to be brought when Jesus Christ is revealed. So your hope isn't in the problem getting fixed right now.
Your hope is in God's ultimate grace. You're shifting the entire foundation of where you're putting your trust.
Precisely. And that's a monumental shift. It moves us right into his next big idea, which I found really challenging. He called it the practical atheist.
This one hit home for me. He was saying that when he gets really anxious, even as a pastor, he subconsciously starts planning a future that has no God in it.
Yeah, he said he thinks Kent has to figure this out. Kent has to fix this. God just sort of disappears from the equation.
And he was very clear. That is a lie of the enemy. That idea that you are all alone and it's all on your shoulders.
It's the ultimate pride, really, believing you have to carry it all yourself.
So the antidote to that is what he calls the but God principle.
Yes, but, and this is important, it's not a way to just ignore your problems. It's not spiritual bypassing.
Right. You have to start with that sober reality. Yes, the credit cards are maxed out, but God. Yes, I miss my dad so much it hurts, but God.
Exactly. The but God doesn't erase the first part of the sentence. It puts it into a much, much bigger context.
Right.
He said it's about learning the art of recognizing God.
Recognizing that you live in a space that is so much bigger than just this one problem.
And the quickest, most practical way to start recognizing God, to push that finger out, is Thanksgiving.
Not the meal.
No, not the stuffing and the turkey. The actual act of giving thanks. The practice of gratitude.
Because that act forces your mind to pivot. It forces you to set your mind on what the Spirit desires, like it says in Romans 8.5.
It's a mental and spiritual reset. He said the difference in a solid Christ follower isn't that they don't have problems, it's where their mind is set.
Which is the perfect lead-in to his deep dive into Psalm 100.
The ultimate psalm of thanksgiving. There is zero anxiety, zero fear in this psalm. It's just pure, unfiltered gratitude.
And I loved his practical challenge for everyone at Harmony. He said, try reading Psalm 100 in your car on the way to church every week.
Yeah, to shift your mindset from, I have to go to church, to I get to go. Change the posture before you even find a parking spot.
Okay, so verse 1, shout for joy to the Lord, all the earth. He said this is not a polite golf clap.
Not at all. His comparison was perfect, especially here in Kentucky. It's like when UK hits a buzzer beater to win the game.
Yes. You scream, you hug strangers, you completely lose your composure in pure joy.
That's the level of visceral joy he's talking about. When was the last time we let ourselves feel that for what God has done?
And then he brought in that bit of science, which was fascinating.
It was, that researchers have identified 6 types of human screams, and the one our brains recognize the fastest isn't fear or anger.
It's joy. The scream of joy and pleasure.
Our brains are literally hardwired to prioritize recognizing celebration.
So if we're biologically designed to respond to joy, how much more should we be spiritually disciplined to express it?
And his application was that we have every reason to shout because the Spirit of God lives in us. The building isn't what's holy. We are. We carry the holiness with us.
That's a reason to shout right there. Then he moves to verses 2 and 3 about worship. Worship the Lord with gladness. Come before him with joyful songs.
And again, the point is that worship isn't just something we do on Sunday. It is the very act that pushes the problem back. It's the mechanism for the finger test.
Then he hits that identity piece in verse 3. Know that the Lord is God. It is he who made us, and we are his.
This is so critical, because when that finger is up against your eye, you start to define yourself by the problem. I am my debt. I am my diagnosis.
But Wagner's reminder is that your true identity is. You are fearfully and wonderfully made. You are a special possession. You are loved by the Good Shepherd.
And he made this point so powerfully that Jesus came knowing, as he put it, the mess that you are, all the failures, all the mistakes, and he still chose you. He wants you.
That recognition of your true value then fuels what he talked about in verse 4.
Enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. This is an intentional posture.
He contrasted our sort of quiet, composed American church services with what he saw at the Temple Mount in Israel.
Right. He described it as noisy, loud, wild, people shouting, singing, kids with drums and cymbals.
Yeah.
Celebration.
It was a party, a parade.
Yeah.
It wasn't about quiet reverence. It was about loud, unfiltered gratitude saying, yes, life is hard, but God is good, and we're not going to be quiet about it.
That is the energy of pushing the finger back. That is focusing on the goodness of God so intentionally that the problems just have to melt into the background.
And it all rests on that final promise in verse 5. For the Lord is good, and his love endures forever. His faithfulness continues through all generations.
That's the bedrock. That's what makes all of this possible. Even when things are bad, that promise is still true. His goodness outlasts our problems.
So as we wrap this up for our Connect groups, what's the big takeaway, the main application?
It really is to just start practicing. Push the finger out by intentionally looking for where God is at work. Start small.
He mentioned things like just hearing kids giggle or when someone does something kind, like paying for your groceries.
It's about training your brain, training your spirit to see the light even when you're in the middle of a struggle.
And he gave a direct challenge to everyone at Harmony. which is a perfect thing for Connect groups to talk about. He said to overwhelm social media this week.
Yes. Post something, anything that starts with the phrase, I am beyond thankful to God for.
What a great way to create a wave of gratitude. So as you head into your discussions, use this. Talk about practical ways you can shift from being problem-focused to gratitude-focused, even just for this week.
And that brings us to our final thought. Thinking about that contrast between the loud, wild Temple Mount and our often very quiet, composed worship. If Thanksgiving is the key to pushing back anxiety, and if our brains are wired to recognize shouts of joy above all else, what does it mean if our cheers for a sports team are louder than our praise to God?
That's a challenging question.
It is. How can we, in our own lives and in our church, make the reality of but God sound and look more joyful, more unreserved, and maybe just a little bit louder?
A lot to think about there. Thanks for diving deep with us. We'll catch you next time.